We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Daniel Murphy know that's what he's doing?
No, he's up there. He's hearing the crowd.
That's just the second fastball he's thrown in this at-bat.
3-2 breaking ball. Jerry Blevins, throw it.
Now you don't sit on the breaking ball. You look fastball.
Fastball, adjust. Lock him up, Blevins. Adjust. Let's see if you can lock him up with a fastball.
Ah! I love it when I'm right. Oh, that's why we do this.
We got to bring that back, pitch.
Oh, Jerry Blevins.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to score. David Haw in today. Bruce Levine off. He'll be back next week. That was the voice of Dan Plesac, our next guest. Dan having some fun, some banter on the MLB Network studio. That was a lot of fun to listen to him, and he joins us now on the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I remember that night very well, as a matter of fact. Jerry Blevins, it was one of my cooler, funnier moments, you know, when stuff like that happens on live TV and you're kind of going pitch by pitch with what's going on because you've had some experience being out there under the gun. So, yeah, that was quite a fun night with Harold and Greg Amsinger.
You always have fun and looking forward to getting to a lot of things here, Dan. Let's start with one of your former teams, the Phillies. You obviously watched what they did in this postseason. It looks like a team having fun and peaking at the right time. You know, in the NLCS now against the Diamondbacks are a good story in their own right, but it looks like this is Bryce Harper's time. It looks like the Phillies think that they are the team of destiny this year. Are they going to be a team that anybody can beat?
No, they're winning the whole thing. You know, Greg Amsinger has given me a hard time in August. If you go back and you look from like the middle of June on, the Phillies, like pound per pound, were as good as the Atlanta Braves. But what hurt the Atlanta Braves, their pitching was in shambles. It was a miracle they pitched as well as they did against the Phillies. You go back and you look at Max Fried really for almost 3 weeks, hadn't thrown any game. He had issues with the blister. So I don't know how in the world people could have thought like a guy that missed that much time was going to go against that lineup and be able to shut them down. He struggled. Bryce Elder was a great story April through, let's say, early August, and he started to fizzle down towards the end of the season. Young guy, more innings than he's ever thrown in his life, starts to catch up on him. So he's down and not pitching well. And then you've got Charlie Morton, who was so good for them, up and down at the beginning of the year, but started to figure it out post All-Star break. They really missed him. So their top three guys, two pitched, but both really freed with an injury. Elder, maybe too many innings his first year in the big leagues. They just didn't have the pitching to contain the Phillies. And I will say this, Dave. When I look at all these, I don't know if you feel this way. I've watched every game of, like, every playoff game. That Braves-Phillies series might have been the World Series. I don't know if we're going to see more drama, more excitement. Every other series, you know, Twins, Astros, Brewers, Diamondbacks, Diamondbacks-Dodgers, none even came remotely close to that energy and that drama that was in every single one of those Phillies-Braves games. That felt like we may have seen the best of the postseason. I hope we haven't, but I'd be surprised if we're going to be able to match the intensity that was in those four games.
Not only the intensity, but the talent level of the two teams. They may have been the two best teams, the deepest and most talented teams in the postseason, playing each other in the NLDS, which I think some people are looking at as evidence to make their point about, well, you know, this system seems to be a little broken because you have all these 100 lost teams exiting. Dan, I go the opposite way. I think it's great for baseball.
And you know what? This is what gets lost in the shuffle, right? So the Dodgers are out. The Brewers are out. They're you know, 101 teams are out, right? Every one of those teams with 3 weeks to go was saying the same thing. Want to win the division, want to win the division. We want to get out at first round. That's dangerous. We want to be able to rest up, get our lineup, get our rotation set. Every single one of those teams wanted to win the division for the fact of you don't want to be the Milwaukee Brewers. You don't want to run into a hot team like the Diamondbacks They have Corbin Burns, Freddie Peralta. You get what you ask for, right? All of a sudden, bang, you get knocked out. You get knocked out early. And I just think that for whatever reason, whether the time off some of the teams, it didn't work out that way. Hey, it worked out right for the Houston Astros, right? They took care of business they need to take care of. I'm with you. I like the setup the way it is. I think we're in sports now. We're trying so hard to, like, okay, if something happens one year, now, you know what, next year, Dave, all four of those teams that had the time off, they might win, and we would be looking at a complete scenario and saying, boy, it's not fair, these teams that had to grind for 162, and these guys sat back, and they were fresh, and they picked off a team that was struggling and on fumes. It's just the way it worked out this year.
Talking with Dan Plesac from MLB Network, and Dan, when you look at the Arizona Diamondbacks, they lost 110 games 2 years ago. And you know, as the pride of Crown Point, Indiana, you know that the White Sox and the Cubs are always looking for takeaways from the postseason. When you look at the Diamondbacks, and then you look at a team like, well, the Cubs in 2 years became competitive again. This 83 victory season was fun on the north side. And you look at the White Sox, and maybe you have a little bit harder time finding hope, but they lost 101 games. Is there anything about the Diamondback resurgence that the White Sox can learn from, or teams that are feeling down on their luck this season can learn from?
Yeah, you got to get the right kind of players, man. When I played for the Diamondbacks, and we went from worst to first, I believe that was in 2000, Jay Bell had one of the greatest lines ever. He said, you know, the key to like having good teams and sustaining it is all really good teams. Their old players play like they're young, and their young players play like they're old, a la Corbin Carroll, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy that has a less year in the big leagues, but when you watch him play, he has a slow heartbeat. The moment doesn't get too big. And I will say this, there is a lot of talent on that White Sox team. Now, with that said, there've got to start being some questions answered about what kind of players are some guy. What kind of player is Moncada? Can you depend on him? Can you rely on him? Is he going to be the guy? Not flashes of 2 weeks, is he good? And then 3 weeks, you're not so sure. And I think sooner or later, you have to find out and make a decision on, okay, is that the kind of guy you want in your clubhouse? Is that the kind of guy you want in your lineup? Can you count on him? Can you depend on him? And I think what you have to do, this is just my personal opinion, I get to, at a national level, we do this thing, 30 teams in 30 days. Mm-hmm. You get to go around to all the teams and all the ballparks, and they give you access for a day, and you just get to watch and observe. And I just think there's something missing there with the White Sox. I don't know what it is because I'm not there on a daily basis, but there's too much talent on that team to be floundering below 500. This is 2 years in a row. And, you know, Dave, I took the bait this past year. I thought there is no way that this team could be possibly this bad with this type of roster, but it was. And so I don't know what the changes are, but they've got to make some changes because the current way that they're going about it, it's not working. And I'm not there daily, but I pay attention to this game every day. And it just felt like to me, you're closer to it than me, it just felt like to me, June, July, August, and September, it almost felt like White Sox fans finally were like, we've had enough of this. Can we get this thing fixed? Because what's currently going isn't working, and it's not fun to watch. That's just my take.
Yeah, there was a lot of frustration. Certainly it was palpable, and I think that finally when they made the move that nobody thought they would make, Dan, in the front office by getting rid of Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn after so many years, now it's Chris Getz's turn to figure out what direction he wants to take this team, whether it is a longer-term rebuild or he wants to kind of go into free agency. I think that will be the offseason question that he has yet to answer or address. But let's stick in the American League because the teams that have done it well, you have the Astros as a model of consistency doing what they always do. They're back. The Rangers are interesting to me, Dan, because it's going to be Exhibit A of what happens when you spend your way into relevance or back into prominence. And I think the Rangers did that by investing heavily in some free agents, and I wonder if that's going to be the takeaway, or will it be you hire the right manager, as we talked about, and good things will happen?
I think you have to do a little bit of both. Now, you also have to have some pretty deep pockets. Now, when you go back, you look at the Rangers. They went out and they jumped into the water on Jacob DeGrom, right? That didn't work, right? Six starts, they lost him for the year. They went right back in and jumped in at the water, that deep end of the water at the trade deadline to bring in Max Scherzer. Now, you know, is he going to pitch in this league championship series? Nobody knows yet. They're going to make a game-time decision whether he's going to be added to the roster or not. But what they were able to do, they hit a home run in free agency with Nathan Eovaldi. There's another guy. They spent a lot of money on Eovaldi. He was great for 4 months, end of August, early September, stint on the IL. He's back now. He's throwing the ball really well. A guy that doesn't get enough credit, and to me, Dane Dunning is kind of what Kyle Hendricks was to those really good Cubs teams, right? You don't talk about him much. You don't hear about him much, but just every 5 days, he keeps you in the game and keeps you consistent. And those are the kind of guys you have to have. And no matter how you cut it, slice it, and dice it up, the best way to get better fast is to hit a home run or figure out the way your pitching staff's going to go. It's happened with the Diamondbacks. They have a couple of young guys that have stepped up. That is what has kept the Brewers relevant for the last handful of years because, to be quite honest, up until this year, Christian Yelich has been a fraction of what Christian Yelich is. But when you run, you know, Woodruff and Burns and Peralta out there, three good starters, you know, they're going to keep you in some games. And Merrill Kelly has done a terrific job. And the guy, Zach Gallen, who's going to pitch game one, has done a really good job. So they have two really good pitchers they can depend on. And up until the last 2 weeks of the season, the Cubs had that guy too in Jake Steele. But I think the innings started to catch up to him towards the end of the year. Hey, listen, I've seen too many situations that look dire and bleak. And you're like, man, I don't know when this team's ever going to get good again. And I can understand why White Sox fans can feel that way. But one big trade, one key free agent signing, one guy steps up and start. Maybe that guy's Moncada. Maybe this is the year, Moncada, in 2024, he turns into the player everybody thought he was going to be. And if they have him and they have Eloy, you have the makings of a couple of really good players. And listen, Dylan Cease, the question to me is, Where are you at with Dylan Cease? Is he the guy from 2 years ago that was a runner-up for the AL Cy Young, or the guy this year that seemed like he had a handful of starts where he couldn't get out of his own way? They need him to turn it back around, too. If they are going to get better and be relevant and be a 500 team, Dylan Cease has got to be more like the guy in 2021 than the guy he was in 2022.
I love that, Dan, and you know the White Sox well, and you know how many White Sox fans spit out their coffee when you compare Dane Dunning to Kyle Hendricks in the same week that Lance Lynn gave up four home runs. That trade did not age well for the White Sox.
No, and, you know, that's the crazy part about, but then you look at some trades, though, that, you know, the Cubs and the White Sox, they were able to get a haul back for Quintana, and sometimes right. You don't know what you're going to get when you're going to make a trade, but the White Sox have to do something. That division is so winnable. The Guardians lineup, like, you look at the Guardians outfield. I mean, they didn't even hit 20 home runs between three outfielders all season long, right? Yeah, they can pitch, but that pitching took a little bit of a hit this year. Bieber was down on the IL. The Tigers, still a lot of growing pains for the Tigers. The Royals look like they're far away from winning. And to me, it almost feels like the Twins won the division this year by default. You know, they were hovering around 500 into late August, and they kind of had a big series where they blew the Guardians out of the water. And really, the other teams in the AL Central, they kind of gift-wrapped that division to the Twins this year. They really did. They handed it to them on a platter. So, I mean, it wouldn't take much, a couple of moves here and there, for the White Sox to be relevant again, to get to 500. Then when you have one of those teams where you're at 500 going into June and July, you make a trade at the deadline, you get some enthusiasm, you get 5-6 games over, then all of a sudden you start thinking about better things to come down the road. So as bleak and as ugly as it seems today, things can change awfully quick. And I've seen it happen too many times in too many organizations, and you're never as bad as you think you are, but you've got to make some changes to get better.
Last thing, Dan, we've got about 60 seconds. You know the Big Blue train well on the north side. This week, Tom Ricketts sent a letter to season ticket holders saying that, you know what, it was nice the season that they had, but not getting to the playoffs is not a successful season. Cub fans nodded their heads in agreement. How do you think the approach will be this offseason? How aggressive will the Cubs be in spending, and how close are they to being one of these final four teams?
They're close to being a good team. They were a good team till about 2.5 weeks left in the season. They just, unfortunately, the bullpen was on fumes, out of gas. I think the one disappointment I would take, Dave, is I would have liked to seen them done something at the trade deadline to acquire a veteran arm, kind of like what the D-backs did with Paul Sewald. You know what I mean? You've got to, like, try to give those guys a little bit of a break. Alzai there for a while, it looked really good. He was going to close games. But that bullpen was on fumes at the end. They're close to being really good, man. And I hope, I'm crossing my fingers, I'm just hoping they can keep Cody Bellinger, because he seems like a good fit for them. He likes the Cubs. The Cubs like him. I get it. Scott Boras is his agent, so it's not going to be easy, and he's not going to give him a discount. But, boy, he sure looked good in the Cub uniform.
He sure did. I hope they keep him. You're exactly right. Dan, this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate your time. Keep up the great work.
You got it, Dave. Anytime.
Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, longtime lefty, former Cub, former major leaguer for a long time, and he brings it each and every time that he talks about MLB. Good stuff on the White Sox. Interesting idea about the Cubs to agree with him about Bellinger. I think that's the key move to this offseason.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh.
Daniel Murphy know that's what he's doing?
No, he's up there. He's cheering the crowd.
That's just the second fastball he's thrown in this at-bat.
3-2 breaking ball. Jerry Blevins, throw it.
Now you don't sit on the breaking ball. You look fastball.
Fastball, lock him up, Blevins. Let's see if you can lock him up with a fastball.
Ah! I love it when I'm right. Wow! That's why we do this.
We got to bring that back pitch.
Oh, Jerry Blevins.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score. David Haw in today, Bruce Levine off. He'll be back next week. That was the voice of Dan Plesac, our next guest. Dan having some fun, some banter on the MLB Network studio. That was a lot of fun to listen to him, and he joins us now on the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I remember that night very well, as a matter of fact. Jerry Blevins, it was one of my cooler, funnier moments, you know, when stuff like that happens on live TV and you're kind of going pitch by pitch with what's going on because you've had some experience being out there under the gun. So, yeah, that was quite a fun night with Harold and Greg Amsinger.
You always have fun, and looking forward to getting to a lot of things here, Dan. Let's start with one of your former teams, the Phillies. You watched what they did in this postseason. It looks like a team having fun and peaking at the right time. You know, in the NLCS now against the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are a good story in their own right, but it looks like this is Bryce Harper's time. It looks like the Phillies think that they are the team of destiny this year. Are they going to be a team that anybody can beat?
No, they're winning the whole thing. You know, Greg Amsinger has given me a hard time in August. If you go back and you look from like the middle of June on, the Phillies, like pound per pound, were as good as the Atlanta Braves. But what hurt the Atlanta Braves, their pitching was in shambles. It was a miracle they pitched as well as they did against the Phillies. You go back and you look at Max Fried, really for almost 3 weeks, hadn't thrown any game. He had issues with the blister. So I don't know how in the world people could have thought like a guy that missed that much time was going to go against that lineup and be able to shut them down. He struggled. Bryce Elder was a great story April through, let's say, early August, and he started to fizzle down towards the end of the season. Young guy, more innings than he's ever thrown in his life, starts to catch up on him. So he's down and not pitching well. And then you've got Charlie Morton, who was so good for them, up and down at the beginning of the year, but started to figure it out post All-Star break. They really missed him. So their top three guys, one, two pitched, but both really Fried with an injury, Elder, maybe too many innings his first year in the big leagues. They just didn't have the pitching to contain the Phillies. And I will say this, Dave, when I look at all these, I don't know if you feel this way. I've watched every game of like every playoff game. That Braves-Phillies series might have been the World Series. I don't know if we're going to see more drama, more excitement. Every other series, you know, Twins, Astros, Brewers, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, none even came remotely close to that energy and that drama that was in every single one of those Phillies-Braves games. That felt like we may have seen the best of the postseason. I hope we haven't, but I'd be surprised if we're going to be able to match the intensity that was in those four games.
Not only the intensity, but the talent level of the two teams. They may have been the two best teams, the deepest and most talented teams in the postseason, playing each other in the NLDS, which I think some people are looking at as evidence to make their point about, well, you know, this system seems to be a little broken because you have all these 100 lost teams exiting. Dan, I go the opposite way. I think it's great for baseball.
And you know what? This is what gets lost in the shuffle, right? So the Dodgers are out. The Brewers are out. They're you know, 101 teams are out, right? Every one of those teams with 3 weeks to go was saying the same thing. Want to win the division. We want to get out at first round. That's dangerous. We want to be able to rest up, get our lineup, get our rotation set. Every single one of those teams wanted to win the division for the fact of you don't want to be the Milwaukee Brewers. You don't want to run into a hot team like the Diamondbacks. They have Corbin Burns, Freddie Peralta. You get what you ask for, right? All of a sudden, bang, you get knocked out. You get knocked out early. And I just think that for whatever reason, whether the time off some of the teams, it didn't work out that way. Hey, it worked out right for the Houston Astros, right? They took care of business they need to take care of. I'm with you. I like the setup the way it is. I think we're in sports now. We're trying so hard to like, okay, if something happens 1 year, now you know what, next year, Dave, all four of those teams that had the time off, they might win, and we would be looking at a complete scenario and saying, boy, it's not fair, these teams that had to grind for 162, and these guys sat back, and they were fresh, and they picked off a team that was struggling and on fumes. It's just the way it worked out this year.
Talking with Dan Plesac from MLB Network, and Dan, when you look at the Arizona Diamondbacks, they lost 110 games 2 years ago. And you know, as the pride of Crown Point, Indiana, you know that the White Sox and the Cubs are always looking for takeaways from the postseason. When you look at the Diamondbacks, and then you look at a team like, well, the Cubs in 2 years became competitive again. That's, this 83-victory season was fun on the north side. And you look at the White Sox, and maybe you have a little bit harder time finding hope, but they lost 101 games. Is there anything about the Diamondback resurgence that the White Sox can learn from, or teams that are feeling down on their luck this season can learn from?
Yeah, you got to get the right kind of players, man. When I played for the Diamondbacks, and we went from worst to first, I believe that was in 2000, Jay Bell had one of the greatest lines ever. He said, you know, the key to like having good teams and sustaining it is all really good teams. Their old players play like they're young, and their young players play like they're old, a la Corbin Carroll, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy that has a year in the big leagues, but when you watch him play, he has a slow heartbeat. The moment doesn't get too big. And I will say this, there is a lot of talent on that White Sox team. Now, with that said, there've got to start being some questions answered about what kind of players are some guy? What kind of player is Moncada? Can you depend on him? Can you rely on him? Is he going to be the guy? Not flashes of 2 weeks, is he good? And then 3 weeks, you're not so sure. And I think sooner or later, you have to find out and make a decision on, okay, is that the kind of guy you want in your clubhouse? Is that the kind of guy you want in your lineup? Can you count on him? Can you depend on him? And I think what you have to do, this is just my personal opinion, I get to, at a national level, we do this thing, 30 teams in 30 days. Mm-hmm. You get to go around to all the teams and all the ballparks, and they give you access for a day, and you just get to watch and observe. And I just think there's something missing there with the White Sox. I don't know what it is because I'm not there on a daily basis, but there's too much talent on that team to be floundering below 500. This is 2 years in a row. And, you know, Dave, I took the bait this past year. I thought there is no way that this team can be possibly this bad with this type of roster, but it was. And so I don't know what the changes are, but they've got to make some changes because the current way that they're going about it, it's not working. And I'm not there daily, but I pay attention to this game every day. And it just felt like to me, you're closer to it than me, it just felt like to me, June, July, August, and September, it almost felt like White Sox fans finally were like, we've had enough of this. Can we get this thing fixed? Because what's currently going isn't working, and it's not fun to watch. That's just my take.
Yeah, there was a lot of frustration. Certainly it was palpable, and I think that finally when they made the move that nobody thought they would make, Dan, in the front office by getting rid of Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn after so many years, now it's Chris Getz's turn to figure out what direction he wants to take this team, whether it is a longer-term rebuild or he wants to kind of go into free agency. I think that will be the offseason question that he has yet to answer or address. But let's stick in the American League because the teams that have done it well, you have the Astros as a model of consistency, doing what they always do. They're back. The Rangers are interesting to me, Dan, because it's going to be Exhibit A of what happens when you spend your way into relevance or back into prominence. And I think the Rangers did that by, you know, investing heavily in some free agents. And I wonder if that's going to be the takeaway, or will it be you hire the right manager, as we talked about, and good things will happen?
I think you have to do a little bit of both. Now, you also have to have some pretty deep pockets. Now, when you go back, you look at the Rangers. They went out and they jumped into the water on Jacob DeGrom, right? That didn't work, right? Six starts, they lost him for the year. They went right back in and jumped in at the water, that deep end of the water at the trade deadline to bring in Max Scherzer. Now, you know, is he going to pitch in this league championship series? Nobody knows yet. They're going to make a game-time decision whether he's going to be added to the roster or not. But what they were able to do, they hit a home run in free agency with Nathan Eovaldi. There's another guy. They spent a lot of money on Eovaldi. He was great for 4 months, end of August, early September, stint on the IL. He's back now. He's throwing the ball really well. A guy that doesn't get enough credit, and to me, Dane Dunning is kind of what Kyle Hendricks was to those really good Cubs teams, right? You don't talk about him much. You don't hear about him much, but just every 5 days he keeps you in the game and keeps you consistent. And those are the kind of guys you have to have. And no matter how you cut it, slice it, and dice it up, the best way to get better fast is to hit a home run or figure out the way your pitching staff's going to go. It's happened with the Diamondbacks. They have a couple of young guys that have stepped up. That is what has kept the Brewers relevant for the last handful of years because, to be quite honest, up until this year, Christian Yelich has been a fraction of what Christian Yelich is. But when you run, you know, Woodruff and Burns and Peralta out there, three good starters, you know, they're going to keep you in some games. And Merrill Kelly has done a terrific job. And the guy, Zach Gallen, who's going to pitch game one, has done a really good job. So they have two really good pitchers they can depend on. And up until the last 2 weeks of the season, the Cubs had that guy too in Jake Steele. But I think the inning started to catch up to him towards the end of the year. Hey, listen, I've seen too many situations that look dire and bleak. And you're like, man, I don't know when this team's ever going to get good again. And I can understand why White Sox fans can feel that way. But one big trade, one key free agent signing, one guy steps up and start. Maybe that guy's Moncada. Maybe this is the year, Moncada, in 2024, he turns into the player everybody thought he was going to be. And if they have him and they have Eloy, you have the makings of a couple of really good players. And listen, Dylan Cease, the question to me is, where are we at with Dylan Cease? Is he the guy from 2 years ago that was a runner-up for the AL Cy Young, or the guy this year that seemed like He had a handful of starts where he couldn't get out of his own way. They need him to turn it back around, too. If they are going to get better and be relevant and be a 500 team, Dylan Cease has got to be more like the guy in 2021 than the guy he was in 2022.
I love that, Dan, and you know the White Sox well, and you know how many White Sox fans spit out their coffee when you compare Dane Dunning to Kyle Hendricks in the same week that Lance Lynn gave up 4 home runs. That trade did not age well for the White Sox.
No, no. And, you know, that's the crazy part about – but then you look at some trades, though, that, you know, the Cubs and the White Sox, they were able to get a haul back for Quintana. And sometimes right. you don't know what you're going to get when you're going to make a trade. But the White Sox have to do something. That division is so winnable. The Guardians lineup, like, you look at the Guardians outfield. I mean, they didn't even hit 20 home runs between 3 outfielders all season long, right? Yeah, they can pitch. But that pitching took a little bit of a hit this year. Bieber was down on the IL. The Tigers, still a lot of growing pains for the Tigers. The Royals look like they're far away from winning. And to me, it almost feels like the Twins won the division this year by default. You know, they were hovering around 500 into late August, and they kind of had a big series where they blew the Guardians out of the water. And really, the other teams in the AL Central, they kind of gift-wrapped that division to the Twins this year. They really did. They handed it to them on a platter. So, I mean, it wouldn't take much, a couple of moves here and there, for the White Sox to be relevant again, to get to 500. Then when you have one of those teams where you're at 500 going into June and July, you make a trade at the deadline, you get some enthusiasm, you get 5-6 games over, then all of a sudden you start thinking about better things to come down the road. So it, as bleak and as ugly as it seems today, things can change awfully quick. And I've seen it happen too many times in too many organizations. And you're never as bad as you think you are, but you've got to make some changes to get better.
Last thing, Dan, we've got about 60 seconds. You know the big blue train well on the north side. This week, Tom Ricketts sent a letter to season ticket holders saying that, you know what, it was nice the season that they had, but not getting to the playoffs is not a successful season. Cub fans nodded their heads in agreement. How do you think the approach will be this offseason? How aggressive will the Cubs be in spending, and how close are they to being one of these final four teams?
They're close to being a good team. They were a good team till about 2.5 weeks left in the season. They just, unfortunately, the bullpen was on fumes, out of gas. I think the one disappointment I would take, Dave, is I would have liked to seen them done something at the trade deadline to acquire a veteran arm, kind of like what the D-backs did with Paul Sewald. You know what I mean? You've got to, like, try to give those guys a little bit of a break. Alzai there for a while, it looked really good. He was going to close games. But that bullpen was on fumes at the end. They're close to being really good, man. And I hope, I'm crossing my fingers, I'm just hoping they can keep Cody Bellinger, because he seems like a good fit for them. He likes the Cubs. The Cubs like him. I get it. Scott Boras is his agent, so it's not going to be easy, and he's not going to give him a discount. But, boy, he sure looked good in a Cub uniform.
He sure did. I hope they keep him. You're exactly right. Dan, this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate your time. Keep up the great work.
You got it, Dave. Anytime.
Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, longtime lefty, former Cub, former major leaguer for a long time, and he brings it each and every time that he talks about MLB. Good stuff on the White Sox. Good, interesting idea about the Cubs to agree with him about Bellinger. I think that's the key move to this offseason.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Daniel Murphy,
No, he's up there. He's hearing the crowd.
That's just the second fastball he's thrown in this at-bat.
3-2 breaking ball. Jerry Blevins, throw it.
Now you don't sit on the breaking ball. You look fastball.
Fastball, adjust. Lock him up, Blevins. Adjust. Let's see if you can lock him up with a fastball.
Ah! I love it when I'm right. Why we do this.
We got to bring that back pitch.
Jerry Blevins.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score. David Haw in today, Bruce Levine off. He'll be back next week. That was the voice of Dan Plesac, our next guest. Dan having some fun, some banter on the MLB Network studio That was a lot of fun to listen to him, and he joins us now on the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I remember that night very well, as a matter of fact. Jerry Blevins, it was one of my cooler, funnier moments, you know, when stuff like that happens on live TV and you're kind of going pitch by pitch with what's going on because you've had some experience being out there under the gun. So, yeah, that was quite a fun night with Harold and Greg Amsinger.
You always have fun and looking forward to getting to a lot of things here, Dan. Let's start with one of your former teams, the Phillies. You watched what they did in this postseason. It looks like a team having fun and peaking at the right time. You know, in the NLCS now against the Diamondbacks are a good story in their own right, but it looks like this is Bryce Harper's time. It looks like the Phillies think that they are the team of destiny this year. Are they going to be a team that anybody can beat?
No, they're winning the whole thing. You know, Greg Amsinger has given me a hard time in August. If you go back and you look from like the middle of June on, the Phillies, like pound per pound, were as good as the Atlanta Braves. But what hurt the Atlanta Braves, their pitching was in shambles. It was a miracle they pitched as well as they did against the Phillies. You go back and you look at Max Fried, really for almost 3 weeks, hadn't thrown any game. He had issues with the blister. So I don't know how in the world people could have thought like a guy that missed that much time was going to go against that lineup and be able to shut them down. He struggled. Bryce Elder was a great story April through, let's say, early August, and he started to fizzle down towards the end of the season. Young guy, more innings than he's ever thrown in his life, starts to catch up on him. So he's down and not pitching well. And then you've got Charlie Morton, who was so good for them, up and down beginning of the year, but started to figure it out post All-Star break. They really missed him. So their top three guys, two pitched, but both really freed with an injury. Elder, maybe too many innings his first year in the big leagues. They just didn't have the pitching to contain the Phillies. And I will say this, Dave. When I look at all these, I don't know if you feel this way. I've watched every game of like every playoff game. That Braves-Phillies series might have been the World Series. I don't know if we're going to see more drama, more excitement. Every other series, you know, Twins, Astros, Brewers, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, none even came remotely close to that energy and that drama that was in every single one of those Phillies-Braves games. That felt like we may have seen the best of the postseason. I hope we haven't, but I'd be surprised if we're going to be able to match the intensity that was in those four games.
Not only the intensity, but the talent level of the two teams. They may have been the two best teams, the deepest and most talented teams in the postseason, playing each other in the NLDS, which I think some people are looking at as evidence to make their point about, well, you know, this system seems to be a little broken because you have all these 100 lost teams exiting. Dan, I go the opposite way. I think it's great for baseball.
And you know what? This is what gets lost in the shuffle, right? So the Dodgers are out. The Brewers are out. They're you know, 101 teams are out, right? Every one of those teams with 3 weeks to go was saying the same thing. Want to win the division. Want to win the division. We want to get out at first round. That's dangerous. We want to be able to rest up, get our lineup, get our rotation set. Every single one of those teams wanted to win the division for the fact of you don't want to be the Milwaukee Brewers. You don't want to run into a hot team like the Diamondbacks. They have Corbin Burns, Freddie Peralta. You get what you ask for, right? All of a sudden, bang, you get knocked out. You get knocked out early. And I just think that for whatever reason, whether the time off some of the teams, it didn't work out that way. Hey, it worked out right for the Houston Astros, right? They took care of business they need to take care of. I'm with you. I like the setup the way it is. I think we're in sports now. We're trying so hard to, like, okay, if something happens 1 year, now you know what, next year, Dave, all four of those teams that had the time off, they might win, and we would be looking at a complete scenario and saying, boy, it's not fair, these teams that had to grind for 162, and these guys sat back, and they were fresh, and they picked off a team that was struggling and on fumes. It's just the way it worked out this year.
Talking with Dan Plesac from MLB Network, and Dan, when you look at the Arizona Diamondbacks, they lost 110 games 2 years ago. And you know, as the pride of Crown Point, Indiana, you know that the White Sox and the Cubs are always looking for takeaways from the postseason. When you look at the Diamondbacks, and then you look at a team like, well, the Cubs in 2 years became competitive again. That's, this 83-victory season was fun on the north side. And you look at the White Sox, and maybe you have a little bit harder time finding hope, but they lost 101 games. Is there anything about the Diamondback resurgence that the White Sox can learn from, or teams that are feeling down on their luck this season can learn from?
Yeah, you got to get the right kind of players, man. When I played for the Diamondbacks, and we went from worst to first, I believe that was in 2000, Jay Bell had one of the greatest lines ever. He said, you know, the key to like having good teams and sustaining it is all really good teams, their old players play like they're young, and their young players play like they're old, a la Corbin Carroll, right? This is a guy that has a less year in the big leagues, but when you watch him play, he has a slow heartbeat. The moment doesn't get too big. And I will say this, there is a lot of talent on that White Sox team. Now, with that said, there've got to start being some questions answered about what kind of players are some guy. What kind of player is Moncada? Can you depend on him? Can you rely on him? Is he going to be the guy? Not flashes of 2 weeks, is he good? And then 3 weeks, you're not so sure. And I think sooner or later, you have to find out and make a decision on, okay, is that the kind of guy you want in your clubhouse? Is that the kind of guy you want in your lineup? Can you count on him? Can you depend on him? And I think what you have to do, this is just my personal opinion. I get to, at a national level, we do this thing, 30 teams in 30 days. Mm-hmm. You get to go around to all the teams and all the ballparks, and they give you access for a day, and you just get to watch and observe. And I just think there's something missing there with the White Sox. I don't know what it is because I'm not there on a daily basis, but there's too much talent on that team to be floundering below 500. This is 2 years in a row. And, you know, Dave, I took the bait this past year. I thought there is no way that this team could be possibly this bad with this type of roster, but it was. And so I don't know what the changes are, but they've got to make some changes because the current way that they're going about it, it's not working. And I'm not there daily, but I pay attention to this game every day. And it just felt like to me, you're closer to it than me, it just felt like to me, June, July, August, and September, it almost felt like White Sox fans finally were like, we've had enough of this. Can we get this thing fixed? Because what's currently going isn't working, and it's not fun to watch. That's just my take.
Yeah, there was a lot of frustration. Certainly it was palpable, and I think that finally when they made the move that nobody thought they would make, Dan, in the front office by getting rid of Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn after so many years, now it's Chris Getz's turn to figure out what direction he wants to take this team, whether it is a longer-term rebuild or he wants to kind of go into free agency. I think that will be the offseason question that he has yet to answer or address. But let's stick in the American League because the teams that have done it well, you have the Astros as a model of consistency doing what they always do. They're back. The Rangers are interesting to me, Dan, because it's going to be exhibit A of what happens when you spend your way into relevance or back into prominence. And I think the Rangers did that by, you know, investing heavily in some free agents. And I wonder if that's going to be the takeaway, or will it be you hire the right manager, as we talked about, and good things will happen?
I think you have to do a little bit of both. Now, you also have to have some pretty deep pockets. Now, when you go back, you look at the Rangers, they went out and they jumped into the water on Jacob DeGrom, right? That didn't work, right? Six starts, they lost him for the year. They went right back in and jumped in at the water, that deep end of the water at the trade deadline to bring in Max Scherzer. Now, you know, is he going to pitch in this league championship series? Nobody knows yet. They're going to make a game-time decision whether he's going to be added to the roster or not. But what they were able to do, they hit a home run in free agency with Nathan Eovaldi. There's another guy. They spent a lot of money on Eovaldi. He was great for 4 months, end of August, early September, stint on the IL. He's back now. He's throwing the ball really well. A guy that doesn't get enough credit, and to me, Dane Dunning is kind of what Kyle Hendricks was to those really good Cubs teams, right? You don't talk about him much. You don't hear about him much. But just every 5 days, he keeps you in the game and keeps you consistent. And that those are the kind of guys you have to have. And no matter how you cut it, slice it, and dice it up, the best way to get better fast is to hit a home run or figure out the way your pitching staff's going to go. It's happened with the Diamondbacks. They have a couple of young guys that have stepped up. That is what has kept the Brewers relevant for the last handful of years because, to be quite honest, up until this year, Christian Yelich has been a fraction of what Christian Yelich is. But when you run, you know, Woodruff and Burns and Peralta out there, three good starters, you know, they're going to keep you in some games. And Merrill Kelly has done a terrific job. And the guy, Zach Gallen, who's going to pitch game one, has done a really good job. So they have two really good pitchers they can depend on. And up until the last 2 weeks of the season, the Cubs had that guy too in Jake Steele. But I think the innings started to catch up to him towards the end of the year. Hey, listen, I've seen too many situations that look dire and bleak. And you're like, man, I don't know when this team's ever going to get good again. And I can understand why White Sox fans can feel that way. But one big trade, one key free agent signing, one guy steps up and start. Maybe that guy's Moncada. Maybe this is the year, Moncada, in 2024, he turns into the player everybody thought he was going to be. And if they have him and they have Eloy, you have the makings of a couple of really good players. And listen, Dylan Cease. The question to me is, where are you at with Dylan Cease? Is he the guy from 2 years ago that was a runner-up for the AL Cy Young, or the guy this year that seemed like he had a handful of starts where he couldn't get out of his own way? They need him to turn it back around too. If they are going to get better and be relevant and be a 500 team, Dylan Cease has got to be more like the guy in 2021 than the guy he was in 2022.
I love that, Dan, and you know the White Sox well, and you know how many White Sox fans spit out their coffee when you compare Dane Dunning to Kyle Hendricks in the same week that Lance Lynn gave up four home runs. That trade did not age well for the White Sox.
No, and you know that's the crazy part about. But then you look at some trades though that you know the Cubs and the White Sox, they were able to get a haul back for Quintana, and sometimes. Right. You don't know what you're going to get when you're going to make a trade, but the White Sox have to do something. That division is so winnable. The Guardians lineup, like you look at the Guardians outfield. I mean, they didn't even hit 20 home runs between three outfielders all season long, right? Yeah, they can pitch, but that pitching took a little bit of a hit this year. Bieber was down on the IL. The Tigers, still a lot of growing pains for the Tigers. The Royals look like they're far away from winning. And to me, it almost feels like the Twins won the division this year by default. You know, they were hovering around 500 into late August, and they kind of had a big series where they blew the Guardians out of the water. And really, the other teams in the AL Central, they kind of gift-wrapped that division to the Twins this year. They really did. They handed it to them on a platter. So, I mean, it wouldn't take much, a couple of moves here and there, for the White Sox to be relevant again, to get to 500. Then when you have one of those teams where you're at 500 going into June and July, you make a trade at the deadline, you get some enthusiasm, you get 5-6 games over, then all of a sudden you start thinking about better things to come down the road. So as bleak and as ugly as it seems today, things can change awfully quick. And I've seen it happen too many times in too many organizations. And you're never as bad as you think you are, but you've got to make some changes to get better.
Last thing, Dan, we've got about 60 seconds. You know the big blue train well on the north side. This week, Tom Ricketts sent a letter to season ticket holders saying that, you know what, it was nice the season that they had, but not getting to the playoffs is not a successful season. Cub fans nodded their heads in agreement. How do you think the approach will be this offseason? How aggressive will the Cubs be in spending, and how close are they to being one of these final four teams?
They're close to being a good team. They were a good team till about 2.5 weeks left in the season. They just, unfortunately, the bullpen was on fumes, out of gas. I think the one disappointment I would take, Dave, is I would have liked to seen them done something at the trade deadline to acquire a veteran arm, kind of like what the D-backs did with Paul Sewald. You know what I mean? You've got to, like, try to give those guys a little bit of a break. Al's and I there for a while. It looked really good. He was going to close games, but that bullpen was on fumes at the end. They're close to being really good, man. And I hope, I'm crossing my fingers. I'm just hoping they can keep Cody Bellinger because he seems like a good fit for them. He likes the Cubs. The Cubs like him. I get it. Scott Boras is his agent, so it's not going to be easy, and he's not going to give him a discount. But, boy, he sure looked good in a Cub uniform.
He sure did. I hope they keep him. You're exactly right. Dan, this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate your time. Keep up the great work.
You got it, Dave. Anytime.
Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, longtime lefty, former Cub, former major leaguer for a long time, and he brings it each and every time that he talks about MLB. Good stuff on the White Sox. Interesting idea about the Cubs to agree with him about Bellinger. I think that's the key move to this offseason. What do you-